At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Valerie Kay from Missouri.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Valerie, and I am an addict. And I'm very, very nervous. I was assuming that you all would be at the concert and wouldn't be here tonight. That was the plan. You know, I said, sure, I could do that. It's 10 o'clock. Everybody will be at the concert. But I'd first like to thank everybody and all that had anything to do with this wonderful, wonderful convention. Didn't you guys have a great time? I've had an awesome time. I have partied from the time I landed here on Tuesday until tonight, and I'm hoping that I will do some more partying even tonight. First of all, I also would like to thank my sponsor for being in my life and showing me how to live clean. I brought tissue because I probably will start crying. I start this journey in recovery July the 3rd, 1990. And through the grace of God, a loving God, and the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I have never had to use since. When they gave me this topic, I started laughing because the last 2 years of my life, have been the roughest 2 years I've spent in recovery. Resentment and forgiveness. September the 7th. This is not just for the day. If I could read a little of this, it probably calm me down. Where there has been wrong, the program teaches us the spirit of forgiveness. And in A, we begin to interact with the world around us. We no longer live in isolation, but freedom from isolation has its price. The more we interact with people, the more often we find someone stepping on our toes. And such are the circumstances in which resentments are often born. Resentment, justified or not, are dangerous to our ongoing recovery. The longer we harbor resentments, the more bitter they become, eventually poisoning us. To stay clean, we must find the capacity to let go of our resentments, the capacity to forgive. We must first develop this capacity in working steps 8 and 9, and we keep it alive by regularly taking at step 10. I'm going to tell a little about the step that I'm on, and that is step 10. And I'm doing this step while here at the World Convention. I stayed on step 6 for a long time, almost 2 years or so. I had to write 100 in character defects. When I started that step, I only had 2 or 3. When I finished the step, I had 150. So, and it's so amazing what God does for you, what you can't do for yourself. And this is my story, and I know I may step on someone's toes, but this is what happened to me. You know, I was in a very unhealthy marriage, and I knew it was unhealthy, but I stayed in it for my own personal reasons. It's probably a lot to do with financial reasons. I had the custody of my grandchildren. And the reason I had custody of my grandchildren is because my daughter's husband molested my oldest granddaughter. It was very painful, and I called the authorities because I didn't believe my daughter would leave him, because she never left him before. It was a very abusive relationship, and those children had been through a whole lot of things, and that was not my oldest granddaughter's father. And when I found out about it, I was devastated. The state came in and took my grandchildren, and they stayed in custody for several years. And my oldest granddaughter, the one that was molested, she called me and begged me to take her, because she said that the community which she lived in, nobody looked like her, and she was having a hard time. And could I please take her? And it was a challenge because I was married to a man that never had children. And my spirit, I just couldn't leave my babies there. We had this big old house, and I didn't understand why they didn't come and live with us, you know. Because I grew up in a community where we always took care of everybody took care of the babies, you know. That was just what we did, you know. Your babies, anybody's babies, you know. You come over, everybody, you know, we just took care of them, you know. I mean, it wasn't like we had a bunch of money. It was just average. It is what you do. You know, so I didn't know nothing else. You know, just like you came in my house, if you didn't eat in my house, my mother and father would think there's something wrong with you. You know, I came to that kind of community. You know, it was just, that's what we did. You came over, and it didn't matter. We fed you, and we were just that community type. And he wasn't raised like that. You know, he was a very rural area. And so anyway, he didn't have those same values. That's why it's important when you're in relationships to find out other people's values. You know, because they may not be the same as yours. But, you know, I'm learning that now. Well, anyway, I went on and told him that I got to get my babies, you know, and maybe our marriage may not stand this new experience, because they were hurting kids. You know, kids that have been hurt, and it's very painful. Well, anyway, we went on and went through the counseling and everything, and we got the kids. And I'm shaking about it because it really is painful. Well, anyway, we got the kids, and we were doing okay for a minute there. You know, challenges, when kids are hurting, they hurting. And he used to always say that hurting people hurt people. And I'm going to say, yeah, but, you know, we got 12 steps. You know, we can make some different choices. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that you can do a step, but you have to implement that step in your life. You know, you can't just write it on paper. I did step one, two, or three. You have to implement that. And that's where recovery comes in, when you apply the principles and the steps in your life when stuff happens, you know. Well, anyway, we were going on and doing that. Well, anyway, long story short, I guess about 14, 16 months ago, it was a lot of just chaos all around in my area. My sponsor's husband was really sick, and he was in the hospital. It was just really bad. It was just crazy, you know. He was very well known in our area, and he was really sick, and he was. Once he went in the hospital, 11 days later, he was gone. Well, in the same time period, my granddaughter, the other one, the baby now, who's 11, 12 years old, not the oldest one, but the other one, came into my bedroom and told me that my then husband had stuck his tongue down her mouth. And you have, you know, it's a look that somebody gives you when you've ever been molested or abused. I was molested when I was little, so I know the look. And it's not a lie. And when she said that, something in my heart I just crumbled, you know. And he denied it. Well, anyway, long story short, I found out some other stuff. He had been writing her letters in the house. And those letters, they were tormenting her, telling her what he wanted her to do. Real sick stuff. And I didn't know this man had so many demons. You know, I feel like anybody that would do that to a child must have a lot of demons in them. You know, they're very sick and they're very, they're just very sick. And I had to walk through that. One night, you know, hindsight is always 50-50 or whatever, 20-20. I always get that mixed up. 20-20, 50-50, you know, I'm not even a betting woman. I don't know why I say that. But I'd rather go to the mall. That's another problem. I'm working on that one too. But I got up one night about, I guess it was midnight or so, and he wasn't in the bed. And when I woke up, I walked in the hall, and there he was coming out of her bedroom. And I asked, what are you doing? And he said, I was in her bathroom trying to see what it was I needed to fix her sink. Well, if you know what a Jack and Jill bedroom is, it's a bathroom is when one bedroom is on one side and the other bedroom is on the other, and they share the bathroom. If he was fixing the sink, why didn't he go out the other bedroom? Why did he come out her bedroom? Well, she was, after this stuff went down, she told me stories about him going in her bedroom at night and the things he wanted her to do to him. And as I tell a little bit more and more about this details, I get angrier and angrier and angrier. And when I found the supportive documentation that all this stuff was true, because like I said, he wrote letters, it was a rage that came through my body from the bottom of my toes to the top of my head. And I got so shaky and I was so scared that I was going to do something that would cause me to wear an orange suit for the rest of my life. I called my sponsor. And it was hard to call because I knew what she had already gone through. Her husband had already passed away. All this stuff was going on at the same time. But I called her, and she directed me to what I needed to do at that moment so I wouldn't wear an orange suit for the rest of my life, because she knew that that was what I was going to do. And back this up, I had already, once this came out, I had already called her over, and we had made a plan to keep my baby safe, because I didn't want to accuse somebody of something unless I actually had it. I don't believe you should ever accuse an individual of anything that serious unless you know for sure. Like I said, once I found this documentation, that's when I called her and said he did do it. In that 6 weeks' time between her telling me and this coming about, we had made it possible where she would never be in the home alone with him. Because, again, I wasn't sure. But my gut, you always listen to your gut. And my gut told me something's not right here. Something is going on here. And I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I thought about it every day and night. I couldn't think about nothing else because I was thinking, this is a man I spent 15 years with. You don't understand, with my life. And I knew he had some demons, but nothing like this. You know, I didn't think he was that sick. After knowing what we already went through with my oldest granddaughter, he knew the pain and the struggles I had gone through with that, you know, trying to work that through a family. You know, that is a And that is something that was very painful for me. And I couldn't believe that he could do that knowing what that had already done to my family. You know, that tears a family apart. You know, I had lost some respect for this man anyway because he had already cheated on me before. But since I'm not going to say bad things. I had lost respect, but that took losing respect to a whole different level. You know, so the resentment part, I can't even begin to tell you. I had a woman that, she's my best friend. She's not part of the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And she knew everything was going on. And she was the first thing she said, "Val, you got to forgive him." I said, you know, because he was taken out of our home January the 18th, 2010. And I didn't see him again until we sold the house in August of that same year. Never saw the man again. We lived in the same town. This is a little small town because I live 60 miles north of St. Louis now. So I never saw him. And everybody said, "Val, he didn't want to see you. That's why you didn't see him." But anyway, it took a lot of work. And it was a process that I had to do a lot of soul searching, you know, because mentally I thought about it all the time. That's all I could think about is what did he do and when he did it. And it was like I had to learn to forgive myself. Because I didn't have that knowledge, because I would never put my granddaughter in that position. But I had begun to dislike myself. What kind of woman was I will allow somebody like this to do something this to my baby? But I didn't know that. And as soon as I found out, you know, I did something immediately, you know, to take care of my baby. You know, and it was very difficult for me to even forgive myself, you know. And that's why it took a lot of work. And it's still, I have forgiven myself, you know, because I know I've shown what I've done, you know. And even talking to her, she has taught me how to forgive. Because she said, "Yes, I've forgiven him." Because she's so much happier now. You know, listen to your children. You know, I noticed he was telling me things like, "She is so fast. We need to do this and this and this with her. She's just running around here acting so fast." And I'm like, "She's a nice girl, you know." And I'm dealing with this stuff over here, like I said, with my sponsor. So I get all this stuff in my head going on. And he telling me how lousy she is. And I'm like, "She is the nicest one out the bunch, you know." She loved him as a grandfather because he was the only grandfather she knew. And that stuff bothered me, you know, it really did. It tore me up inside. But like again, he was removed from my home and we went on and we moved into a nice brand new lot smaller. I was living in a 4,000 square foot house, you know, on 5 acres, you know. And let me tell you, stuff don't make it happen for you. You can have all the stuff in the world and your house be empty and cold. It's not a home. You know, stuff don't make you happy. The diamonds and the rubies and the pearls, it don't make you happy. A loving God and working these steps and knowing who you are and the freedom from active addiction has made me more happy than any other stuff. And now the peace of mind and not have that evil in my home. I can run around the house, you know. I can put that drape up. I like that, you know. And I like that. And that's the stuff I'm learning, you know, and I'm doing today, you know. I'm finding Valerie today, you know. I came to this convention, and I've just been clowning, you know what I'm saying? I've been doing stuff that I would never have done before because I was in a relationship where it was based on what you like. You know, because you made 3 times as much money as I did, so I didn't want to keep that coming, you know, because I told you I had another disease. I have a disease. I'm a shopaholic. And, you know, and I had to look at that, too. I had to look at myself because, see, I can't trip off of, I can't keep on pointing the finger at what he did. I had to look at the part that I played in this whole relationship, you know. That's how I'm going to recover, is looking at the part I played. And my play, the part I played is, you know, I'm greedy. My greed, you know, I stayed too long. There was evidence of this all along, but if you're still tripping off of what you got, how you look, what's going on, a lot of stuff you will miss in the whole process of this, what's going on around you. I know today that stuff don't mean anything, you know. It's a whole bigger picture, and, you know, the freedom, you know. And that was very difficult, you know, because the case is still pending, so I don't go into a lot of details. I just give you the highlight. The highlight alone makes me sick to my stomach, you know. But my granddaughter today is happy. You know, I remember I redid her room. I made it all bright and pretty colors so it wouldn't look like that room she left behind. I put her into therapy, you know, and she's doing much better, you know. And I watch her, you know, because I know some of this can happen later on, you know. When I go around the tables and I have women I sponsor, and see, that's what I trip off of. These are the same things that happens and people have to work through today, you know, of what someone had done to them years ago. You know, the feeling, the shame and the guilt, you know, that we have to face. I had to do that. You know, when I first went into treatment, I had forgot about the man that molested me. You know, the dope will cover up a whole lot of stuff. When you're chasing the dope, you don't think about all the other stuff that happened to you. So when the dope was gone, then what do you do now? You know, and I started, once I started the process of recovery and looking at all of that, I remember that the reason why I used dope. You know, the first time I got high, I was 11 years old. And it was because of the shame and the guilt. I felt dirty. When he did that to me, I felt dirty. I felt nasty. I didn't like feeling like that. So I had an opportunity to drink a fifth of one of, what's that, that clear liquid, not the vodka that one of the country people drink. What is that? Lightning. White lightning. Yeah. I drank some white lightning, and I got really pissy, I really got pissy drunk. And I always tell the story, I was drunk, I laid in my emesis, I'm in nursing, I laid in my emesis in my urine, and I remember my mother in the background saying, you know how when you're drunk, you just barely, you know, you're trying to come out and still throwing up. Let her lay in it, and maybe she'll never do it again. Are you kidding? I tried to do it again every chance I got, you know. And that was to cover up that shame and guilt and that feeling of dirty, you know. And I felt dirty and nasty. So I'm watching those signs in her, you know, and talking openly about her feelings and where she's at with that. I don't want her to turn into some promiscuous little hoochie. Even though she got a body now, she's 13 and she's shaped like, wah, 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 you know. And I'm just like, hold it down, girlfriend. You know, they have a saying now, you know, she's thick with it. She's thicker than the snicker. Yeah, that's her now, you know. And she's 13, but she walks around like, duh, 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 duh. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, so I'm watching all that stuff, you know, and I'm getting better, you know. Working this 10th step has really helped me tremendously, and it's where I'm supposed to be, you know. I try to get some resentment from my sponsor, but I can't do that because I love her so much, you know. She could probably do anything to me, and I'd be like, I can't stand you. When can I come over and work this step, you know? I just And because she's been there in some of the darkest moments in my life, you know. When my mom passed away, that was a dark moment, and I tried to have that resentment with my God for a minute, you know. It was really sad, and I was just devastated, and I walked through that. And the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous was there for me. They carried me through. Because when she passed away, I had worked through a lot of stuff with my mother. When I was 36 years old, no, that's when I went into treatment. No, when I was 32 something, I was in my 30s. You know, I'm an old lady now, so 30, that was 20 years something ago. All right, when I was 32 years old, I found out that the man that raised me, who I thought was my father, was not my father. And I only found out on accident. I asked. And the only reason I asked is because my then husband, and I had two of them, he said, you know, when you're sitting back doing the do, you know how when you're back in the day for me, you know, we're sitting back, you know how you, when you're getting high, you be thinking you know how you be thinking you know everything and you get to tripping off, yeah, do you hear about that? You know, you're getting high, partying and stuff, you laying up, you know. That's what we did. We used to lay up a guy. Anyway, and I was telling them how my feelings, you know, my feelings this, and how I never felt like that was, you know, I belonged to this family. And he looked over at me and said, you think your daddy your daddy? I said, yeah, he's my daddy. No, he's not your daddy. I'm like, what you saying? He says, no, Charles not your daddy, Valerie. I said, well, everybody know this, you know, and everybody knew it but me. I did not know he wasn't my father. And so I went to my mother and I just asked her. I said, is he my father? Is Charles my father? And you know how that moment of silence when somebody, you ask them a question and they don't answer right away? And I felt like a knife had stabbed me in my heart. Because he's the only man I knew. Even though he was the son of a gun, he's the only man. He took care of me. He was there. And he wasn't my daddy. I did a lot of dope over that. But I worked through that with my mother because my sponsor told me, if you want this relationship with her, because once I got clean, it started coming out more and more, you know. She said, you're going to have to fight for it. You know, you're going to have to maybe reach more than that 50% if you want this relationship with your mother. And I did. I wanted a relationship with my mother. I loved my mother. It was just hard to have a relationship with someone that had lied to you for 32 years. It's very difficult. And I have a problem with that today. That's one of the things I'm really working through, too. I have this... I'm a really black and white kind of person. I don't have a lot of gray. And I'm really into the honesty thing, you know. I'd rather you be butt naked honest with me than to continue to lie to me. You know what I mean? Because the relationship cannot go anywhere with this denial, you know, or these lies. I mean, what kind of, if we are expected to have a healthy relationship, there has to be honesty. And not none of this little pretend honesty, like, where you only telling me half the truth. Come up with it. You know, if you want us to have a healthy relationship, and I want healthy relationships in my life today. It's mandatory. I didn't get clean for you to be sitting there, you know, lying to me. You know, I do that with my sponsees. I had a sponsee that kept on relapsing. And I was like, you know, I'm not the best. I may not be that sponsor for you. Because apparently it's not working. You continue to relapse. You know, I do three times you out, you know. And I only got up to three times because I had a sponsee that was like, you can't do that, you know. I said, okay, I'll give you three times. But, you know, okay, you know, whatever. But I can't, it's not working, you know, and it was basically, she was very dishonest, and she was you know, that. She was, you know, and it's like, and she did it, she would do it over the phone, because anytime she would start using, that's how I knew she was using, because she wouldn't come around, because she knew as soon as I saw her face, I knew she was using. So she would make up stories like her blood sugar is low. You know, that's why you sitting there. Yeah, right. You know the nod. It's not that. All right. But anyway, so honesty is very important. And I believe that was a big problem in relationship in my marriage. A lot of dishonesty. You know, my mom used to tell me, you know, it's only three things you can do all night long. If you out all night long, there's only three things you're doing. You know, and in a marriage, if you're doing any of those three things, it's not healthy for the marriage. You know, so you lose respect for a person. If you lose the respect for an individual, you cannot have a healthy relationship. And inside a marriage, any relationship, you know, sponsor, with your employer, any kind of relationship, or with a friend, you know, with this stuff that's going on here, you know, I got another situation, you know, that tops that with my ex. Is he's now engaged to, was one of my sponsee's sisters. You know, and that's something I want to share, you know, it's one of my soapbox things. You know, we don't need to come in here and, you know, stab each other, you know, in the back. You know, we did that out there in the world, you know, when we was doing the do. Let's don't do that inside here. Don't come in my face and be trying to screw my man behind my back. You know, let's don't do that, you know, to each other. You know, you don't pretend you're my sponsee's sister, and then you're talking to me to find out ways that how you could screw my husband, you know. Well, you can, you know, that I don't think that's cool. You know, that's disrespectful, you know, and I'm about giving you respect today, you know, and we don't need to do that to each other. That's all I'm going to say on that subject. But I forgive that because I believe they deserve each other. I think they're a match made in hell. You know, so. But that's all I'm going to say. I'll be better. I'm not going to do anything bad, you know. And I am so much happier today. You know, it sounds like a real sad story. But I'm going to tell you, working the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, oh, my God, I have peace today. I'm not obsessing because, you know, I'm working that 10th step, so I can't obsess over anything. Because, you know, it's one of the questions they ask you, have you obsessed over your... Oh, no, I'm not obsessing him to do something else. So I'm conscious about everything I do. You know, I'm nicer to people. Hi, how you doing? You know, sure. I don't want to ask, it's just so funny, and I start laughing at myself, you know, because I'm like, oh, my God, am I really working this thing or what? You know, and I've had an awesome time here. Working it here is real easy because most of the questions are yes. Because why aren't you happy? You're in a convention of Narcotics Anonymous in San Diego, California, and the weather is awesome. I wish I could move here. You know, I live in Missouri. You know, it's like 110 today, you know. So I've been very fortunate, you know. I have wonderful people in my life, you know. I have a network of sponsee sisters that are upright and all right, you know. These women I can call any time of day or night, you know, and I don't have to fill in the blanks with them. And I have some men friends, too, only platonic. It's been a long time for anything else, and it's okay. And, you know, I'm happy for that. I'm not advertising that, but it's time for me to find out who I am. And if I ever want to be a healthy mate for someone, I need to get healthy. You know, I need to clean the wreckage of all this out of my life and actually implement what I said before, these steps in my life, so I can become a healthier woman today. Because if I want a healthy man, shouldn't I be healthy first? You know, I don't want you to have any garbage, you know, because I don't want no garbage, you know. So I'm finding out who I am, you know, and getting butt naked honest with Valerie, you know. The greed thing, you know, I'm working really hard on that, you know. Okay, I did shop a little too much before I came, but I did put some money aside, so I am all good with that. And I didn't shop hardly any since I've been here. Yeah, hardly any. I got a few things, but I didn't go to Macy's, you know. As long as I didn't go to Macy's, I think I'm doing really good. You know, I'm gonna be real about that. But I have, all kidding aside, you know, I have really looked at some of those character defects, my part that I played in this whole relationship, in any relationship I have. You know, the bitterness thing, when I was reading in here, I could see that I had become bitter, and I did it at work. I'm an office manager for a group of MAs, for a group of physicians, and I have several MAs underneath me, and I've been a witch. I'm not going to use that other name. I've been a witch, and it has affected my job performance. And it's because I've been bitter because of that inward hate, you know, that I had being in such a sick relationship. So I took it out on my my employees, you know. Everything they did, I confronted them. You know, the workplace is totally different from back in the day now, you know. You have to tolerate a lot more, you know. Remember, I'm a real black and white person. It's like, you know, when you're checking out a patient, I don't think you should be on your cell phone. You know, I'm like, hey, you think you is okay? some things I'm like, I shouldn't have to tell you. But apparently you have to tell people, you know. They said, well, Val, could you probably have said it a different way? I'm like, what way is it to tell you? Get yourself off the phone. You know, but they say you have to be nicer. You're supposed to say nice words, you know. And I'm learning how to say nice words. I have to go to this class now on how to be nice. I am not lying. They want me to go to nice classes, you know. And I'm like, okay. You know, I just think it's automatic. You know, we're in healthcare, you know, is struggling now. They can go anywhere and get healthcare. You know, we have to be on our A game all the time to service you, you know, so you can be happy and you can come back, you know. So I don't think I should have to tell you how to act. You know, you've been in the business too over 10 years. You should know how to perform properly. So, but that's been an issue where my character defects have come out, and I'm working on that as well. And the steps 6, 7, and 8. 9 and 10 will help me do that just fine. But I'm doing much better today, and it's because of the program of Narcotics Anonymous and a loving God. My God has been there every step of the way, and I can see His presence. I don't hate Him. I don't hate Him like I wanted to, because it was not His fault. You know, we have choices today. You can make any choice you choose today. And I choose to make the choice of being the best person I can be, you know, at this moment, at this time, you know, and allowing you to be the best person you can be, you know. And if you and I both fall short, we have another day or we can just start our day at that moment all over again. You know, we don't have to wait and start it the next day. You know, I'm grateful again for Narcotics Anonymous, this world convention, and everybody who allowed me to share this evening. I am not going to continue to bore you. I want to tell you that I love you, and I'm so grateful that you guys took the time out of your busy day to come here tonight. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Valerie. That was fantastic. And now at this time, we'd like to introduce our second speaker, who just by coincidence is my sponsor. Isn't that something? Anyway, here we go. This is Carrie L. Via Texas and Michigan and Indiana, and now he's from California. Carrie L.
Thank you. My name's Carrie. I'm an Eddie. I just found out coming up here that Joe is the chairperson for the meeting. He's known about this for a few months. He's been staying at my house since Tuesday. Not a word. That's okay. I like surprises, especially good ones. I'd like to thank Valerie one more time for sharing. She did a great job. Thank you for a message from the heart, because it touched my heart. You know, and thank you for sharing these things that are so personal and painful. Pain shared is truly pain lessened, and I hope you benefited from it as much as I did and the rest of us have. Well, Chris came up here in red, and he's recoiling. I've had the opportunity to sit with Chris in a couple meetings since I've been here, and he's been nervous and intimidated, and I want to say thank you, Chris, and here's why, because Chris has this enthusiasm, right? The enthusiasm of the newcomer when they're first clean, and he's walking around this place going, yeah, you know, and it's. You know, that is fleeting. I mean, I experienced that when I was a newcomer and at various times in my recovery. And the great thing about it is it's contagious, you know. So thank you, Chris, because, man, I'm on fire, okay? So you've given that. So when I got the call to come here and do this, and by the way, I'm grateful to be here. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to come here at all, let alone, you know, come and do a workshop. My daughter was scheduled to have a baby right about now. Yeah. And so when they called, the first thing I thought was, well, they said, you know, will you speak? And they gave me the date, and I went, well, yes, on a contingency. I need a backup, you know, because if my daughter has a child, I won't be there. And they said, fine, that's good. And I got asked to speak somewhere else, too, right before this, and I had to tell them the same thing. So it was difficult. I hadn't been in that position before. I wanted to say yes, but knew that I had to make some decisions about priorities in my life. The second thing I thought was when they said it was at 10 o'clock, I was like, that's past my bedtime, man. You know, I used to come to conventions, you know, and be like, hey, 3 a.m. marathon meetings, you know, and now my sponsees go, come on, we're going to the marathon. No, I'm going to bed. I'll see you at breakfast, you know. So it's been pleasant being here. And I did become a grandfather. And thank you to Owen Patrick for arriving 2 weeks early. Good job, man. So he saved me and didn't know it. anyway, when I was a newcomer, relatively new, I remember having a conversation with my sponsor, who I really didn't know how to use yet. But you know, we were talking about the steps and the program, and I decided I'd let him know right off the bat that I didn't have any resentments, you know. And I mean, he really needed to get it through his thick head, you know, that I didn't need to do any of this four-step stuff, right? We could skip that one. And he was pretty slick, you know. He really was. He said, okay. He said, do you think anybody resents you? And I said, yeah, you know, they probably don't have the same ability I do to forgive and forget. So, yeah, I think so. He said, well, that's good. He said, I want you to make a list of all the people that resent you then, and we'll talk about that. I said, okay, I can do that, right? Yeah. So, you know, he later told me one time, he said, you know, it was okay to take somebody else's inventory as long as you sign your name at the bottom, right? So that was my first journey. I'm like starting to take other people's inventory, right? little did I know that it was mine, you know. And so I made this list, and we talked about them, you know, about the situations. And, you know, lo and behold, of course, I found out I indeed have a number of resentments that need to be tended to. I've been carrying a lot of stuff around, okay? So it was definitely necessary to begin a fourth step and begin to examine those things, you know. And one thing about my relationship with this sponsor, and it should have been a clue for me right off the bat, but I would go to meetings and I would hear people share, "Oh, I called my sponsor last night. Oh, I felt so much better when I got off the phone." And I would sit there and think, huh? You know? And I called him one day and I said, "You know, I keep hearing these guys say they feel so much better talking to their sponsor." I said, "Doug, every time I get done talking to you, I am pissed off." You know? And he said, "Well, Kerry," he said, "that's the only feeling you have to work with." He was right. He was right. I was kind of an angry young guy, you know. Fortunately, you know, as a result of this program, I'm not so angry anymore. Not so young either. But we started to discuss these resentments, and I started to learn what they were and what to do about them. I looked up a few things for this. I looked up a definition in Webster's of resentment. It says, a feeling of indignant displeasure or persistent ill will at something regarded as a wrong, an insult, or an injury. Okay? Another one I found was, resentment is a memory of a past invalidation when I have felt invalidated. You know? And I thought about this topic about resentment, why I'm not being my best self, right? If you play with that word, invalidation, a little bit, you get invalid. You know? If I'm suffering from an invalidation and I'm holding on to resentment, in a sense, it makes me somewhat invalid. That's not my best self. Okay? About the time when I got this call to do this workshop, a little bit of history. I moved to San Diego about 11 months ago from Indiana, and I'd lived there a long time, for about, since 1987, and had a pretty good support network set up for myself, and some of them are here. And came out here just by myself, started over. I'll maybe touch on some of the stuff that preceded that. But I took a job working for a treatment center. I got back into the addictions field, which I'd been out of for a really long time. And that was a bit of a struggle when you're out of something for 20-some years. But I started having some issues with a coworker. And they were getting bad. And I was, you know, trying to really be spiritual about it and just pretty much take it. And, you know, I was talking to my sponsor about it. And he was gently suggesting, you know, that I do some things. And I said, "No, you know, I'm good. I can handle this, right?" And then I started to realize, like, I was going to a meeting on Friday nights, and I was going to coffee with a guy that I work with. And I'd be riding home from coffee after spending an hour at coffee, and I just wasn't feeling very good about myself. And I kind of snapped it. I'd spent the last hour bitching and whining about this situation because, you know, he knew about it. You know, he knew the people involved, so he could relate to it. And, you know, I started thinking, you know, man, I just had the opportunity for some great fellowship, you know, And all I did was bitch and whine. You know, I need to do something about these resentments. Right? So I had to do some writing. Right? And I had to do some praying. You know, and I had to do some more writing and some more praying. Right? And then I had to take some action, too. I had to go into work and talk to the person in charge and say, you know, this is going on. You know, and I'm about to start firing back. And it's not going to be pretty if I do that. You know, and let them know. And then I had to look at my part, you know, because I don't want to be firing back. Right. I mean, I learned a long time ago, two wrongs don't make a right. Right. But the good news is, I got switched to a different team, so I don't have to deal with that person anymore. You know, and I believe that's a result of prayer, you know, and good looking out by my coworkers. And I don't have to feel it anymore because I've let go of it. I looked at my part and I've prayed for this person, you know, and it's been healed. I want to talk a little bit about what resentment really is. First of all, resentments are a really popular topic in meetings, are they not? I mean, you hear about it a lot, you know. Why is that? Do we just like talking about bitching or, you know? And it isn't. It's because avoiding them or dispensing with them is essential to maintaining my recovery. You know, they're going to get me loaded, okay? And everybody suffers from resentments. You know, it's almost unavoidable. And if I think that I'm never going to get any resentments, it's probably time to check my ego. You know? But when we get to the bottom of 98% of most of the troubles in life, including my spiritual life, I usually find resentment. I'm carrying something for too long. And the biggest problem is it's a prelude to relapse. And there's a huge denial about that, you know. There's that part of me that wants to go, nah, I'm okay, I can handle this. I can handle this. I got this. It's not that big a deal, right? That's called tolerating, right? I can tolerate it. And tolerance is not acceptance. It's not the same thing. Because when I accept something, right, it's gone, right? Right? What do they say? Acceptance is mind over matter. If you don't mind, then it don't matter. Right? But when you're tolerating, you know, you're going, I got this. And it's like a pressure cooker building. You know, I can deny it all I want. And I can even deny it to the point where I can sell myself a bill of goods, right? I can join the BYOB club, you know, buying your own bullshit. I can convince myself everything's good. I'm okay. You know, but it's just down there gnawing at me deep down inside. And I need to get free of it. Okay? And I don't know if it's just being sadistic, why I like to hold on to resentment. I don't know. Or masochistic, you know. But it certainly happens, you know. Because for some reason my brain tells me, oh no, you know all this stuff, man. You don't have to worry about this. You got this, right? That's the first red flag, right? Because that means I don't need anybody. I don't need my sponsor. I don't need any sponsees. I don't need any support, right? You know, I will say this, is that I mentioned this a couple weeks ago in a meeting. I found out that I just became aware in a meeting that I wasn't really sharing, like, at all for a while. And I mean, I like to listen, you know, and part of it is I think I get tired of hearing myself talk, you know, which is different in, like, the first few years of my recovery. I think I love to hear myself talk, and, you know, I look back and think, I bet you everybody else didn't, but I was probably the only member of that fan club. you know, I realized that, you know, I was keeping to myself a lot. You know? And so being here tonight is a unique opportunity to share for me. Okay. Resentment. The word itself comes from the Latin root. Re and sentir. Re means simply again. Sentir means to feel. So resentment is to feel again. Right? Anything I feel again. And it's born when I feel any kind of injury to my pride or any kind of hurt to my ego. That's when it's born. Okay? When something happens that injures my pride, or I feel hurt, or betrayed, or angry, or irritated, I'm not resentful yet. Okay? It's when I start saying, it's no big deal. I stuff it. Right? I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not going to share about it. I don't resolve it. That's when the resentment starts to build. Okay? Pride is going to be with me my whole life. You know? So there's always going to be a target, right, for other people to hit. So the only way to really minimize that tendency is to try to practice humility, right? Because the more humility I can practice, the smaller the target becomes to get hit. So I have to strive to practice humility if I want to try to avoid resentments. Not always that successful at that. Forget about practicing humility a lot and ego takes over. So humility, I define humility as like getting right-sized in respect to my higher power and right-sized in respect to you and the world around me. Okay. I also define it as being teachable, you know, where I get to the point where I don't know everything anymore, you know. One of the things I learned around here was the best two words to get rid of in my vocabulary are I know, you know, especially when I was new, because I knew, you know. And when you're talking to me and I'm saying, yeah, I know. I don't really mean I know. I mean go away, right? I mean, shut up. I don't want to hear about it, you know. But I still say it, right? And then it's cousin, yeah, but. You know, I know, yeah, but, right? Like if you get past I know and you start to nail me with it, yeah, but, right? And that always leads to I'm different, right? And that's what yeah, but is about, right? And I'm not different. I mean, that's been proven to me over and over and over again repeatedly in here. Yet for some reason, right, the disease starts saying, you're different. Yeah, but you don't have to do what they do. Right? I found some other things that were pretty interesting. The humility is the absence of any feelings that I'm superior to others. Okay? I found something that Ralph Waldo Emerson said. He said, a man in the view of absolute goodness adores with total humility. Every step downward is a step upward. The man who renounces himself comes to himself. And I like that. I related to that. So, other than defining resentments as feelings that are we feel over and over again, resentments are an invitation to forgive, I think. That's what they are. And it's pretty simple, right? If I'm disturbed about something or resentful, I have two options here, okay? Either I'm at fault and I need to make some amends, or the other person is at fault and I need to forgive them. It's really pretty that simple. I mean, resentment and amends are really two sides of the same coin. Are they not? And we can carry both those things with us over and over and over. right? And I don't know about anybody like that, what you think about this, but I mean, until I started doing my night step work, when I laid down in bed at night, the pictures that flashed through my head and kept me up were the amends I needed to make. They were the things that I felt bad about, and I was re-feeling those feelings over and over, the guilt and the shame of the things that I had done. Okay? So, you know, it's pretty simple. I've heard this many times. If somebody calls me a no-good so-and-so, I either am or I'm not, right? You know? And if I'm not, what difference does it make? Right? And somebody said it in here at another meeting, that better to shut up than open my mouth and prove them right. You know? But it comes down to my relationship with my higher power, that, you know, God's either everything or He's nothing. And if God is everything, then no one else has any power to live in my head rent-free. And most of my resentments that I struggle to resolve on my own, I have to ask my higher power to remove them. Sincerely. And also have to be willing to let them go. That's the hard part, isn't it? Because they're mine. Right, because some part of me likes them. Because there's a lot of energy in that anger and that re-feeling of all that stuff. There really is, you know. And there's also fear of what's going to happen if it's not there. I'll be on unfamiliar territory. God forbid I might be content. Right? I was sitting in a meeting one time waiting for the meeting to start. How am I doing anyway? What time? I need to know. I didn't look at my watch when I started. I was sitting in a meeting, and it reminded me of it today because I was listening to some music on the way here, and I've been walking around all day whistling this song I was listening to, and it's like stuck in my head. And it reminded me that I was sitting in a meeting one day, and this guy came and sat down next to me. He's an old-timer, and he had a newcomer with him. And I was just sitting there whistling, not minding my own business, and the guy said to the newcomer, he said, "You hear that?" And the guy went, "What?" And he goes, "That." And he pointed at me because I was whistling. He goes, "You know what that sound is?" He said, "That's the sound of contentment." Yeah. He was right. I was feeling pretty content. Hey, take it when you can get it, right? So, all right. So anyway, injuries grow into resentments, causing me to refeel it, nurse it, mull it over and over, dig around in it, or in essence, cultivate it. You know, it's like picking off a scab over and over and over. You just can't leave it alone and let it heal, you know, until at some point it gets infected and it begins to spread and infect another part of me. And that's what resentments will do. They'll slowly migrate into other areas of my life, you know, unbeknownst to me sometimes, until I start to feel the way I felt when I was going home from coffee the other night, right? And I went, oh man, there's some work to do here, okay? So I think, you know, once the wound gets infected, it needs a positive antibiotic. And I think the only positive antibiotic, you know, in, at least in the area of, you know, hatred or dislike, however you want to put it, is love. I need some love. You know? I know where to get it. You know? I need to go share and I need to allow myself to be given to and healed. You know, I need to pray for God to put people in my life to carry the message to me and help me. Because I cannot do it alone. We talked a little bit about the ego and making the target smaller. One quote I really love is, a bad day for the ego is a good day for the soul. You know? Now, it doesn't feel that way on that day, right? When I'm having a bad day for the ego and things aren't going my way, it's no fun at all. But in retrospect, sometimes if I can get some clarity and look back, I see the growth, the spiritual growth, that day and on the days that followed. So, one of the things I've heard over the years in this program is that expectations are resentments waiting to happen. Right? I have to watch what my expectations are of others, right? So, you know, taking a realistic look at what I expect of others, that can help me avoid some resentments. When I was new, somebody told me, and this pissed me off, that what I think and what I want have absolutely nothing to do with the way things really are. You know? Well, I didn't like hearing that one bit. Right? Still don't some days. Right? Because I think that's not the way it should be. But it is the way it is. So I have to look at what my resentments are. What my expectations are. Besides, look, I've admitted my life is unmanageable. Does that really mean I can manage yours? I mean, my life's unmanageable because of the manager. Right? And I'm thinking I get to run yours too? That's a setup, right? You know, one of the things I heard over the years here, and you hear it over and over, but it's worth mentioning, that resentments are like drinking poison waiting for the other guy to die. You know? And of course, the other guy doesn't even know. I'm the one that gets to suffer. So, one of the things I found that was similar to that was something that the Buddha said, oddly enough. I know he's not conference approved, but bear with me. He said, holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You are the one who gets burned. That about sums it up, doesn't it? I found a few others I really like I don't have to attend every argument I'm invited to. I didn't know that. Right? There's a part of me that's fiercely attracted to that type of controversy and conflict sometimes. Right? It's a setup. Right? Because I always walk away feeling not content from something like that. You know, the other one I always liked was, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? You know, that's a tough one, isn't it? Because I want to be right. You know, until I'm really unhappy. Then being right doesn't seem quite so important, right? Because even if I am right, and I leave with all this resentment and anger and hatred inside of me, this vile poison, right, that's starting to invade my system and affect me spiritually, geez, being right, that's a great deal, isn't it? So, anyway, here's what I think about resentment, how it starts. It starts with frustration of some kind. At the very base, frustration then becomes resentment. And resentment becomes self-pity. Okay? For an addict like me, self-pity becomes using. If I indulge in it. The fact of the matter is that cycle, I can't really afford any part of that cycle for very long. So I have to watch those things. The self-pity can really be a killer. Besides, one definition I had of self-pity that I learned was accepting someone else for less than their potential. So if pity is accepting you for less than your potential, then what's self-pity? Right? It's accepting me for less than I can be. All right? Which is kind of what we're talking about here. 5 minutes. Thank you. Okay? I wrote this stuff down because I forget stuff now. I had a couple of experiences that I'll share. I was getting ready to move out here 11 months ago. And it was a Friday night, and that was my home group meeting night. But I really needed to go say goodbye to my parents, and they live about an hour away where I grew up. And I went to my parents' house and said goodbye to them. And they had some things for me to do. And it ran a little longer, and I wasn't going to make it to my home group. And so I decided that I'd go to a meeting in my old hometown, which I had never been to that particular meeting on that night before. So I went to the meeting, and I'm sitting in there, and in walks my old drug dealing partner and sits down at the meeting. Now, I haven't seen him in over 30 years, and he looks terrible, okay? And I don't even know if he knows who I am. The last time I saw this guy, I was chasing him through the woods with a gun. Okay? Because he had ripped me and another guy off. You know the story, right? And I really wasn't a gun-carrying kind of guy or anything. I was no gangster or anything, right? But this is the last time I saw this guy that I knew from growing up, right? I was chasing him through the woods with a gun. Fortunately, he got away. Okay? And the guy I was with was so mad that we didn't catch him, he set his car on fire. This guy had a Corvette, so he decided he was going to burn his Corvette up. The biggest problem with that, other than you shouldn't do that, was that I told you we were chasing him through the woods. Well, the car was parked in the woods. So it started a forest fire. Which is kind of hard to keep quiet. So it caused me a lot of grief, with the authorities. They were calling my family, wanting to know my whereabouts, and wanting to talk to me about this forest fire, and this car on fire, and these guns, and but it was ugly. It was a small town, okay? So it was a problem, and I left right away. Anyway, this is a long time ago. And so that's the last time I saw this guy, right? I was chasing him through the woods. And I sat through a meeting with him. And in the meeting he said that, he was just sitting at home and he was wondering what it would be like to go to an NA meeting of his own volition. Because he'd never been to one of his own volition. He'd been forced to go various times by parole officers, probation officers, judges, you name it, right, over the years. And he's still using, okay? He was still on methadone and whatever. And he looked terrible. But that's what he was doing there that night, right? Now, here's what I want to say about this. One of the reasons, in my experience, one of the reasons I have to rid myself of resentment, okay? It's hard to make amends to people that you resent. Okay? And my sponsor knew that when he got that list out of me when I was new about who resented me. Because we got done reading that list. I said, I don't get rid of this thing. He said, no. We're not going to get rid of that one. We're keeping that. That's going to come in handy later. So I knew what I had to do. So after that meeting that night, I went up to this guy and made my amends. He's been on my 8th step list for 30 years. See, and the step says, wherever possible. Doesn't say whenever possible, because dope fiends will go, yeah, whenever. Right? It's it's wherever. When it happens, you better have, or at least I have better have done that 8th step and become willing. Because when it's time, it's time. Right? And I made that amends and I got free of it. Right? I don't think he knew what the hell I was talking about, quite honestly. It doesn't matter. That's a lesson I learned. It doesn't matter what he thinks. Right? It's what I'm doing that matters. Right? Because I was carrying that around all that time. Right? So I got to get out from under that. So the last thing I'm going to share is I'll tell you a story. It has to do with an old timer and a newcomer. And he takes them to a meeting, and they're sitting around before the meeting, and the old timer's starting to share with him. And he says to the guy, he says, "Hey," he says, "you ever want to get even with somebody?" All right, and the guy goes, "Yeah, there's some people I'd like to get even with, right?" And the old timer says, "Well," he says, "I'm going to tell you about some stuff." So he started to tell him about the people that, selflessly did service and kept meetings open, right? And picked up people and brought them to meetings and ran functions and, you know the drill, right? He started filling him in on all this stuff, and he went at length to tell him about that, right? Right? And then he looked at him and he said, "Why don't you try to get even with that?" Okay? That's where I'm at. Yeah. I want to get even with that. Okay? And I know I never can. I know I could never be sufficiently grateful for my recovery. Not sufficiently grateful, so I have to practice it daily. You know? And thank you for my recovery. It's been great being here. I'll keep coming back.
Oh, I really enjoyed cutting him off. I've been waiting for that for a long time. He's my sponsor. Anyway, thank you all for coming. A lot of times people say, "Oh, I'm going back to reality Monday, Tuesday, whatever." And I always say, "This is reality. You're going back to the illusion. So the experience here, keep it with you. Take it with you." Got John here with 2 days. And we have our last reader here is going to read our wonderful reading, "We Do Recover." And we would like to thank Valerie from St. Louis area, Missouri, and Carrie L. By the way, Carrie is living right here in San Diego now. All right.
"I'm an addict. My name is Donna. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative: either go on the best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. It is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous." Woo!
So, I guess maybe we can circle up over here, maybe, huh? Close the meeting. Thank you for all coming, too, and we've got about a day and a half, so let's really enjoy it. My name is Joe, grateful recovering addict. Thank you for letting me be of service.